Coming up on Windows Weekly, Leo's out, but don't fear. We've got Paul and Mary Jo here to talk about a two-faced Paul Otellini, the plight of the Windows 8 store, and no Wookiees, and more.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, recorded September 27th, 2012. The Stink of Adam.
Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToMyPC from Citrix. GoToMyPC connects you directly to your Office Mac or PC from any other computer or from your iPhone or iPad. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the offer code Windows. And by Ford. Ford invites tech geeks to join the conversation, submit ideas, and grab a tech geek badge at social.ford.com.
It's time for Windows Weekly. This is the show where we take a look at the mountain that is Microsoft and we dig and burrow into it, try to figure out what the heck is going on in Redmond. I'm Ayaz Akhtar, and if you're wondering, hey, you know what? You aren't Leo Laporte. You're right. Leo is on special assignment somewhere in SoCal. I have no idea what he's doing, but I hear it's very special. So he's not here. I'm going to sit in this chair, and thankfully, I'm joined by the regular host of this program. We have the very lovely and talented, some even say optimistic, and by some I mean pretty much nobody. We have Paul Thurrott of Win Supersite. How's it going, Paul?
Wait, you're not Leo Laporte?
Oh, shit. What does my lower third say? I'm episode 280, so go ahead.
I'm well, thank you.
You're well. And you're the author of some kind of, what is this? This is like a dead tree product.
Yep.
KSSD. Yep.
It's a book.
It's a book. Okay.
They still make them, apparently. You're holding one.
Windows 8 Secrets. Do what you never thought possible. Windows 8 and RT. You know, I don't have... Actually, I do have a Windows 8 machine today. So should I be learning how to use my machine while...
You should learn how to do what you never thought possible.
Never thought possible. I thought I could use a browser consistently within this thing. Is that possible? Well,
it includes amazing justifications for why you can only put two apps on the screen at the same time. just stuff like that.
It's all about Snap. Including, you know, these pages are like Snap. There's actual extra content in the side.
They're
because
the
resolution.
Exactly the same width.
Because the width of this is 1366 by 768. That's how it all fits. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. A lower resolution book doesn't work. And of course, we have the titan of enterprise things. We have Mary Jo Foley, who tells us everything. Like, you know what? If you ever want to know what Hadoop was and you think about it and you're like, I have no idea. You read Mary Jo's stuff, and I know recently you've been talking about Project Blue. How's everything going?
Everything's going well, except for a little construction today outside my apartment. Otherwise, great.
Are they changing out the windows? Aha! That's going to be that kind of show, folks. Sorry.
Yeah, I wish that was all it was.
Wow.
Wow. Well, yeah, it's going to be a long show, folks. I promise. Yeah. I promise, Paul, this is going to be great. Anyway, let's talk about, let's not criticize my jokes because they are awful. But let's talk about Intel's CEO talking some smack about Windows 8, saying, hey, it's crazy buggy and they shouldn't come out with it. Oh, by the way, we never said that. So we love Microsoft Windows 8. What's the actual story?
Oh, he clearly said that there were problems with Windows 8. I mean, there was no denial at all in there. It's so bizarre. They issued a public statement, which they published to their website, in which they called that report unsubstantiated. In other words, as if, you know, there was a second source that was missing from it to substantiate it or something. But they never actually said, CEO Paul Otellini never actually said that. We actually love Windows 8. What they said was, Paul Otellini has previously publicly stated this and some other more positive thing that you would expect Microsoft's biggest partner to say, you know, out in the public. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but Otellini didn't mention that the Windows RT version was lousy, the one that runs on ARM. He was just saying Windows 8 in general was buggy. So it wasn't like he was just smacking down the other quality stuff. He was smacking all of Microsoft.
I think people are mixing and matching RT 8 regularly. I wouldn't be surprised if he meant both.
But I also think what he was indirectly doing was smacking down ARM, right? It was like, yeah, everyone thinks ARM's so great, so we're just going to insult all of Windows 8 and just say the whole thing's buggy, right?
Yeah, see what happens to Windows when you make it for ARM?
Right.
You know, it turns into this disaster.
Exactly, exactly.
Trying to be all compatible and everything. Now, Intel had an event today in San Francisco. Nobody knew what time it was because Intel didn't mention it. What did they introduce? Cloverfield processors? Cloverfield.
It has not happened yet, has it?
I saw one article about it. I wasn't sure if it happened or if it was like an NDA had broken.
No, I think it's supposed to happen later this afternoon in San Francisco, where Intel invited a bunch of journalists and also a bunch of people making Windows 8 tablets, but not Windows RT tablets, just Windows 8 tablets to come. And we think show off Clover Trail-based tablets. Seems like that's what they're going to do there.
I keep calling Clover Trail Cloverfield based on that monster movie. I don't think that Clover Trail is any kind of monster, is it?
Well, no, because it's an Atom processor. So how monstrous could it be?
I'm hoping at this announcement this afternoon, they say something about timing for these machines based on Clover Trail, because I think it's supposed to be early next year, too. Not this year, right?
Oh, really? Is it not coming out? I thought, is that true?
I'm not sure. Last we heard publicly, I think the roadmap was showing most Clover Trail machines would be early 2013, but maybe we'll hear something different today.
All right. So here's what I don't get about Clover Trail is, A, it's an Atom processor, right? It's not the core processors. It's the Atom, which maybe has improved over the years. I'm not actually positive, but I think most people would agree that when you think Atom, you think low-end netbook, single core, you know, doesn't run very quickly, that kind of thing. And so Intel's response to the ARM side of the equation is Clover Trail. It's an Atom processor that offers that kind of system on a chip functionality that Microsoft keeps talking about. But they're branding it as Atom. Like, wouldn't you call this thing something else? Just to kind of wipe the stink of Atom off of you?
I mean, Atom was somewhat received well on the netbooks. I mean, people did buy a whole bunch of them. And the thing is, tablets aren't exactly thought of as monstrously well-performing machines, are they? I mean, Atom is not necessarily a vilified name yet. It's not like, oh, let's call it Centrino 2 or something strange.
I don't know. I think it's worse than Centrino. I really do.
You think it's worse? Mary Jo, what do you think?
I don't know if it's worse, but I think it's really confusing because I agree with Paul. Like, if you were doing a system on a chip processor, you would think you'd give it a different branding just so you could say, hey, this is what really competes in that category. Right.
We still speak in these huge generalities about ARM because no one really knows. And those generalities are things like this. We believe, even though we're not actually positive that this is true, that these things will be thinner and lighter and get way better battery life than typical Intel-based tablets and other devices and PCs. That's the sort of generality we keep saying. Obviously, Intel's PC maker partners are going to release many PCs and even tablets and sort of devicey-looking things that use Intel's more powerful core processors, you know, the existing Ivy Bridge chips that are out in the world today. But Intel's also going to be selling through these PC makers Clover Trail-based systems that maybe will compete more closely to ARM with those three elements that I mentioned, as well as having all that compatibility stuff, which I think is going to be important to a lot of people. So we'll see. I mean, Microsoft had previously talked about the notion that we sort of thought of it as ARM, but it was really system-on-a-chip-based designs, these SoC designs, which is ARM plus Clover Trail right now. I'm sure there'll be other platforms later too, can take advantage of certain Windows 8 features that aren't available on normal PCs, like connected standby. So this is kind of Intel's version of ARM. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, other than the fact that it's compatible with normal Intel chipsets. I mean, it's obviously it's a PC, but it has those properties that we sort of associate with smartphones and tablets today.
Now, is it possible that they're using the Atom name because they want to say it's a more mature version of the versions that were out already? It's like it's another generation of it. It's an improvement on the older one. So people know the name, and they've probably seen it in their netbooks back in the day. But
people know the name Ford Pinto, too, but I don't think Ford's going to come up with a new one of those this year. Like, it's just, you know, I mean, it's just, I actually think it's that bad. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying that there are no netbook users that don't hate themselves, but I bet most of those people aren't particularly excited about those machines right now.
And I think it's a case too of, you know, there are going to be some Intel Atom based Windows 8 machines that are not Clover Trail, right? So they don't want to totally diss that Atom brand because there are going to be some machines that have that. So if you say, you know, here's the really good ones that are brand X and here are the okay ones that are brand Y, you know, what are people going to think? So I think by keeping the name right, they're going to say, it's all Atom, don't worry. They're all good.
Except that if they do that, that's even worse because there will be Atom systems that don't support connected standby, that don't have, you know, presumably better performance or whatever other characteristics these chips have. I mean, it really needed to be something else. In fact, I would just make this recommendation to every tech company on earth, which is your code names are always better than your real names. You know, I was looking at this a camera I have. The model number is like DMCZS20 or something. Like, what kind of a name is that? You know, like this Atom chip will have a name like that. Why couldn't they have just called this the Intel Clover Trail or whatever? That's such a great name.
Even their core stuff is called Core i5. They don't call it Ivy Bridge or Sandy Bridge. But I mean, is this processor just a necessary evil to keep the prices of Intel tablets low? Because, I mean, ARM is going to kill them on pricing, or all the manufacturers using ARM. But if Intel wants to stay in that price competitive field, they have to have the Atom, which I guess could have been called the DMC or Run DMC.
Nice. Yeah. But I mean, should have just called it Clover Trail. That's the name. That's a great name.
It is.
That's right. You get to run on a clover trail and enjoy your tiles. Or they could have called it Metro. I heard they're not using that.
Yeah. So that one's up in the air right now, so anyone could use that, I guess.
Yeah, you could bet somebody owns Clover Trail trademark, and that's
sure.
Why it's
okay.
Yeah, but in the processor game, I mean, somebody suggested that that with the Atom belongs with Bob and Lisa. You leave those names alone. You never do it again, and that's the end of that.
It's like the island of misfit technology. That's where they go.
So we've got some, I don't know, good or bad news, how you want to look at this. Windows 8, apparently it's Windows Store, which is coming out next month, right? It's available if you've got the developer preview or wherever. What are they calling the thing now? The candidate. 2,000 applications. Should everybody panic because Windows only has 2,000 applications in its store? This just screams like when I saw the headlines, I'm like, this is link bait.
You know, it's funny. It depends how you look at this. Like, I'm actually surprised there are 2,000 Windows Store apps in the store. I didn't think they would have that many. And it's because it's, you know, these are the apps that you have to build on top of Windows RT. They're not your typical Windows apps. They're not your desktop apps, which there are tens of thousands of, right? And those will still run on Windows 8 machines anyway in the desktop. But I think there are going to be more. There's like 60 to 100 of apps launching a day right now. Microsoft just opened the store to all geographies and developers just a couple of weeks ago. So I think there are going to be quite a bit more by the time of October 26th. I saw a lot of people with doomsday headlines saying, there's only 2,000 apps, it's done, it's over. I don't know. Most of the apps in there right now are games and entertainment. There's a few productivity apps. There aren't really any true business apps in there yet. So I'm not ready to say it's a disaster, but I know other people... Are you?
I'm going to point to a specific example. There are, I'm going to have to switch to the store to see this because this is so beautiful. And if you have Windows 8, you got to look this one up. Brian Morris sent me this via email today. This is potentially Windows 8's killer app. It's called Mosquito Killer. And Mosquito Killer prevents you from getting bitten by mosquitoes and some other nasty bugs. And how does it do this, you ask? It emits a very unique high-frequency sound that insects dislike. The pitch of the sound is so high that most humans will not notice anything, which suggests that some humans will notice it, but okay. And that's what it does. That's a Windows 8 app. So of the 2,000 apps that are in the store now, that's one of them. that's unbelievable. I don't know. You know, I'm sure there are some high profile. You're going to do Windows key plus Q. Oh, yes.
I'm doing that.
And then type in mosquito.
Mosquito. All right, mosquito killer recommendations. Click on this. And I'm going to install it and just run it on the show throughout the whole program. Yep. I mean, this definitely seems like it's a little bit of a kick against Bill Gates. Or it's for Bill Gates. This idea that, hey, you know what? You're trying to stamp out malaria. We got an app for that.
I have lots of questions about this app. I'm curious if it runs in the background or if you actually have to leave it running full screen in order for it to work properly.
Okay, well, I think I'm making a huge mistake by trying to play this. Let's see what happens. Loading ultrasound. Ultrasound activated. And our producer is collapsed in the corner. He's holding his ears.
I knew it. I always suspected he was a giant insect.
This is a real problem. Actually, that's a good test if you want to find out. And I guess it's a good test of your speakers. 100%. I can't hear anything. Alex is freaking out. That's good. I'm going to pause this in case it's bothering you, podcast listeners, and try to go back to the dock here. Because
can you believe that that's an app?
Yes,
I mean, seriously, I that's crazy.
You know, the weird thing is, I mean, like, this 2000 app situation. This is Windows. I mean, if you got a browser, you can do anything. What's the big deal? I mean, most of these applications on iPads and all these other things are just basically things that make up for a browser deficiency. It's not necessarily like, it's such a great experience. It's like, no, it's because the browser's broken. I can't do Flash. I can't do...
I'm disappointed that you're trying to poke holes in the 700,000 app store that is, of course, iOS's greatest success.
Yes, I am poking holes in the fact that, I mean, we could pad the numbers. We could right now, Paul, Mary Jo, and Alex, we can all put together some fart apps, right? Yep. Just load up with like 1,000 of them. They ought to be pretty easy to put together.
Sure.
So, but I mean, the thing is the 2,000 number because Windows 8 is hard to develop for? Is it Microsoft's guidelines that are causing issues? Or is it just the fact that it's just a new platform? Well, effectively a new platform with the new tiled interface.
I think it's a new platform. I don't think it's particularly hard to develop for. But it's also on exactly zero PCs. And so it's kind of an unknown. I mean, you could write a desktop application today that you could install on any version of Windows, including Windows 8. Or you could write one for Windows 8 Metro and kind of hope that it takes off. So I think it's going to go slow. I mean, I think the other aspect of this is just that this whole emphasis that we have on apps, on these mobile apps, I actually think is a very temporary condition. And you'll forgive me if I use this exact comparison last week on this very show, but I always compare it to fantasy football, where as my friends, which is normal people, not in the computer industry, got really involved in fantasy football a few years ago, they started getting laptops and using them at home, which is sort of the normal usage pattern that occurred over the past few years. And so there were a couple of years there where we would get together on Sunday and these guys would all bring over laptops, open them up, connect to the Wi-Fi network and be managing their fantasy football thing for a while. It was like the biggest thing in the world. And so we reached a point where I finally had, and of course it's me, like the technology guy, is like, guys, we got to stop breaking out the laptops. We're here to watch football. Let's watch the game that's on TV and not manage all your fantasy players, you know? And that situation matured to the point where now everyone still does fantasy football. In fact, it's bigger than ever, but no one has to pop on a laptop on Sunday to follow their players. You know, we've just kind of matured beyond that. It was a fun thing to do because it was new at the time, but then you kind of move on. And I think that's what apps are like. I think people are just now getting their first smartphone. And so for a year or two, they're going to get goofy and download like 1,100 apps. And then after a while, what you realize is you don't really need most of those. And especially if you use like a more, I don't know, technically proficient operating system like Windows Phone, a lot of the functionality that you need apps for are just built into the OS. And you don't really need all of these discrete apps that all do one thing, you know, in and out, in and out, in and out, you know, that kind of thing. And I just think it's going to mature beyond that.
Well, clearly more is better, right? You have to have thousands and thousands of apps. How else are you going to put that giant number?
Completely
you're
going to say, obvious to everything I just said.
I know. I'm saying that. Like, what are you going to write? Quality? We actually have the apps you want?
Apparently,
that doesn't work. I mean, the funny thing is Windows Phone has a bunch of apps that people want. But people are like, oh, that store is small. It's like, who cares if it's small?
100,000 apps. I mean...
I'm always curious why they didn't do what Apple does and just let Windows Phone apps be in the store too and let people run it at a different resolution. Like, why not?
Yeah,
it's a way to cover up. Then you'd have 100,000 apps plus the 2,000.
I'm sure that what they were worried about was that people would write software vulnerabilities that could impact the host computer. But yeah, I actually, when I first heard about Windows 8, one of the first things that crossed my mind as a heavy user of Windows Phone was how neat would it be to run those things floating on the desktop, kind of like the widgets or gadgets we used to use And, you know, you could have the Windows Phone calendar app for some reason because you just liked that size or whatever. I really could picture people wanting to do that kind of thing. But, you know, it's not happening.
I don't know. That's effectively like having Windows with like gadgets on the desktop or like an active desktop. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Microsoft why would you ever have widgetized technology on something like Windows? It's kind of strange that they didn't bother to put those together. I mean, you could have a mini window. But the funny thing, I think, I don't know if the whole experience would break down because a lot of the Windows stuff is based on that very long scrolling technique. And if you could resize maybe that window so you can see more of it instead of you having to flick in this tiny screen, maybe.
If you could snap it to the side of the screen.
Oh, wow. So you're saying that all Windows Phone apps could be a snappable app.
I'm not saying anything. None of this is happening. I'm just throwing out an idea, you know, a different way that it could have gone. But it's not happening.
In an alternate reality, there are Windows Phone apps running right
on Earth, too.
Yes, exactly.
People are snapping Windows Phone apps right now.
Is that the one where Superman is evil, where he's Ultraman?
Yes.
Or is that – I always mix those up. But, yeah, that's where – Steve Ballmer is well loved by everybody. He is well loved by everybody. I think he's doing a decent job.
I think it's interesting though that they haven't really even targeted the Windows Phone audience to develop apps for Windows 8. Really, I mean, the people who they've been going after so far are the Windows developers. I mean, and there's a lot more of them, obviously. But you'd think they'd put a little more outreach effort into going after people who built for Windows Phone. You know, there's one developer out there for the phone, Bill Reese, who said, yeah, maybe the reason they're not, though, is because developers are disillusioned who didn't make a ton of money on Windows Phone yet. I don't know. I mean, that just seems like a natural audience that they really could be doing Windows 8 outreach to me, and not just Windows Phone outreach.
Not to mention the fact that the audience for Windows 8 apps will be bigger than the audience for Windows Phone apps in 1 month, right? Yeah. I mean, Windows 8 will sell enough that it will immediately be a bigger market.
Well, isn't it supposed to be easier to develop from Windows 8 to Windows Phone 8? There's supposed to be some kind of all kinds of tools to make companion apps, things that work better. So instead of going from Windows Phone to Windows 8 in development, it's supposed to be easier to go the other way.
Yeah, it's not so much about companion apps as it is about the fact that there are big chunks of the APIs that are basically identical between the two. The problem is they change the APIs from Windows Phone 7X. So if you're coming at it from today's Windows Phone platform, you still have to learn all new stuff because all the APIs are changing. It's not fair to say that Windows 8 is a superset of Windows Phone 8 because actually, you know, the phone has specific, you know, handset-specific APIs as well that do not exist on Windows 8. And so it's kind of a weird situation where maybe, I actually don't know the percentage, but let's pretend it's 60 or 70% of it is identical between the two. And then the rest is either different between the two for whatever reason, or some stuff only exists on Windows 8, or some stuff only exists on Windows Phone 8. So there is a bunch of stuff you can go back and forth with, of course. And then the native code stuff, if you are writing DirectX games in C++ or C, you should be able to port that stuff very easily. It's just a resolution issue.
Here's an interesting comment on Twitter from Chris Woodruff, who does the Deep Fried Bytes podcast. So this guy knows what he's talking about. He said, the ones that Microsoft's really going after for Windows 8 are the top 100 iOS app developers and not Windows Phone. Kind of interesting. Yep. I mean, it's a different Microsoft, and they're trying to get a different audience for Windows 8 and Windows Phone. But I think you can't neglect the developers you have in your pocket. All these .NET developers and Silverlight developers, like a lot of them are still feeling really ostracized and don't feel like they should be developing for Metro and, you know, using the WinRT API. They're like, I'm still not sold on this platform. I don't believe in it. I think Microsoft really, really needs to get this message out at Build, which is coming up in a month, and kind of bring these guys back into the fold.
And the message needs to be, we love you all. You know, I was just going to jokingly say, I can't think of a single reason why a Windows Phone developer would be upset right now. But obviously, there are some pretty serious issues there. And it's just unfortunate that this secretive stance that Microsoft takes on all of its public revelations about products and strategy and so forth is infecting the Windows Phone guys. It's too bad.
Do you guys see the RIM music video where they were trying to court developers back or trying to keep them there?
I did.
Is this something Microsoft should look into? Should they have their own music video to tell developers, hey, we still love you and we will be there for you?
I like that video, by the way. That guy has a great voice, and that was, I thought that was a fun song.
Do you know who that is, just Paul, say by the way?
No.
Yeah. Alex Saunders, who used to work for Microsoft.
Oh, my God. Wait, are you serious? The guy singing is Alex Saunders?
It is.
I actually know Alex. That's hilarious.
Yep.
Is that really him singing?
So maybe he could make a guest appearance. He could do one for Microsoft next.
Everyone made fun of that thing and was like, oh, this is cringe-inducing, you know? I thought that was a cool thing for them to do. I mean, RIM has an image problem of a magnitude I don't think even Microsoft could understand. But that was like the first thing they kind of did ever, as far as I could tell, that was goofy and personal and just kind of fun. I thought that was fine. And apparently I'm alone on that one.
You want Microsoft to be goofy and fun and personal? I thought they were about to clean.
Remember when Brian Valentine used to make those awesome videos where, like, you know, it would be like Dumb and Dumber or one of those Chris Farley movies or something. Chris Farley movies or whatever. You know, it would be like Microsoft used to make videos like that. I think stuff like that just humanizes the place. God, it's like, you know, you talk about how these guys are like robotic and impersonal. And then they do something fun and everyone rags on them for that. It's like, what will make you happy? What, you know?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that was great. Where they dumped the smelly Sun Microsystems workstation on the street.
Well, if you're just listening to the audio, this is Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer driving around in a VW in a parody ad of the very famous VW ad with the song. Da, da, da.
Yeah, so in the original VW ad, what they do, pick up like a chair or something?
A chair. Yeah. And they pick up a workstation and put it in the car.
Like a Sun workstation.
Well, do you think Microsoft is warm and fuzzy back then? Are they not warm and fuzzy enough with their tiles now? They're just too sterile?
They've never really been warm and fuzzy.
They still do some of these. Remember Gmail Man last year? That was a fun video.
Oh,
that was Microsoft.
That was really petty, I thought.
It was. It was awesomely petty.
Petty and excellent. Is that what you meant?
Well, excellent.
Petty as a simile for awesome?
Yes. It's a good thing. I want you to find and replace every time I use a word like that and change it to awesome. Just, control F and control G, and you'll be all set right there. And the show totally changes its vibe entirely. Oh, the weird thing is, I think if they had 100,000 apps, people would still be complaining. If they had 200,000 apps, people would complain. It's just that Microsoft's the big dog, and people want to find a flaw no matter what. Oh, they're too warm and fuzzy. Oh, they're not warm and fuzzy. Everybody's going to pick on it because if you're like me at one point and you were a writer, people look at page views, and you want to make sure that people are reading your stuff. So the doomsday headlines would be there no matter what because it's Microsoft. Yeah. You got to do something with that. Yeah, so I've brought this to a screeching halt. So the Windows Phone 8 SDK leaked because Microsoft didn't bother to, I don't know, make it public, let people use it. It's apparently not impressing people.
Could anyone have predicted this one, though? So in June, they promised that by the end of the summer, they're going to give this thing out. And then at the end of the summer, they announced that actually, we're just going to give it out to a select group of people. So please feel free to apply to get it, but understand that if you have not published a Windows Phone app already and you don't impress us in some way, that we're not going to give it to you. And so then a bunch of people are mad because they don't get in. But then they do, in fact, give it out to some number of programmers. And could anyone have predicted that a video of this thing would have ended up on the internet? I mean, of course. And so this is like the double insult, you know, or actually triple insult, depending on how you're counting here. You know, one, promise it and then not deliver it. Two, make a second promise that maybe you're going to get in, but then not let you in. And then give it out and have those people leak it to the internet anyway, rather than just give it to everybody. You know, stupid.
So people are complaining in these videos that are going up now, like WP Central had one this week. They're like, you know, Microsoft said the reason they're not giving out the SDK is because there are features in the emulators that are going to show our hand too much about the operating system. So they put this on, you know, they put it on a PC. They're showing you what's in it. And there's nothing that we don't know.
Anything surprising? Exactly.
No.
Nope.
And so that's why people are mad.
I've been really curious about the fact that, and we've seen all these Windows Phone announcements, you know, HTC's got their 8X and 8S, and we got the Nokia Lumias, and the thing is, all they can show you is the hardware. They can't show you anything else, and they'll bring up, you know, a Microsoft person like Belfiore, and he'll show you, like, the things you already know about the device. Why they're shutting out any interest for this device or this operating system, and they're waiting and holding it. I don't understand why not just we'll show our hand. Big deal. What's the worst thing that happens? If people see it and they comment?
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
we already know what iOS 6 is, right? Like what are they holding it back from? Like, who do they think will, quote, copy it, right? Like, what? I don't know. I mean, I know they want to save some thunder for October 29th, which is the big Windows Phone 8 reveal, supposedly, but sorry for the noise in the background.
Is your stomach grumbling?
That'd be mine.
I wish that's all it was. My window, yeah. Okay. But, you know, there if there isn't a really big reveal on October 29th, wow, our developer is going to be mad, right?
Yeah, so this is just part of Microsoft's newfound love affair with secrecy. I mean, when the Surface was even introduced, nobody saw that coming, at least as far as I know. I hadn't seen any rumors about that, but now is this going too far?
That was the only time they ever got it right. You know, it's so Microsoft to do something right once and then copy it for the next 10 years. Like, what's happening with Windows Phone is what happens most of the time you do this kind of thing. It just doesn't work. And I feel like I'm kind of beating the dead horse here, but I just remind people and Microsoft. Microsoft is not Apple. You know, it just, and even, by the way, even it didn't even work for Apple. You know, was there a single feature of the iPhone 5 that wasn't revealed ahead of time? I mean, this stuff doesn't work. It's never going to work for Microsoft, not with any regularity.
I don't know. They got Smart Glass. I didn't see that coming. At least I didn't see any rumors of that. And then they had Surface.
Sorry, they got.
So they got two. I didn't see that coming. But I mean, maybe there is something.
Smart Glass? What are you talking about? You mean the Xbox feature?
Yeah, the Xbox Smart Glass.
That's not.
Wasn't secret enough. Basically, they had a Wii U killer.
Rebranding. That was more of a rebranding.
Smart Glass is just Xbox Companion 2.0. It's nothing.
I still think
they
killed the Wii U.
They kept the name secret. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, secrets.
I stand corrected. They've done it twice.
Twice.
My point is only that this type of thing doesn't work more than it does work. And that's the problem.
So we're throwing it down now, Microsoft. In late October, we're expecting to be wowed. We want to see these leaks be not even possible. This is not something
What happens? Right. What happens when that does come? And they have this event that they've been planning all these months, where they're going to reveal all the features that are in this SDK and no more new features. I mean, how dumb do they look if that's what it is? What if that is it? Then the Windows Phone 8 launch by their own actions will be a dud.
No, I don't want it to be a dud.
No one wants it to be a dud. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just saying, like, this is how you mismanage this. It's just too bad.
I think we'll all be changing our tune when they somehow solve all of the world's crises in Windows Phone 8 in October, and we'll all be eating our words.
Like, actually, you know what it's going to have? It's going to have that thing that was in the Fox video for the iPhone where it's like a hologram projector.
Oh, yeah.
That is actually a feature of Windows Phone 8.
Yeah, every Windows Phone. They just couldn't show you that. If you don't know the video we're talking about, there was an iPhone video that was running around on Fox, at least. It might have been a hoax, though, that showed off the iPhone 5, and it shot out, you know, a projector, a little keyboard that you could interact with, and it floated, I believe. It showed holograms, all kinds of wacky things. I don't know if Windows 8 is going to be bringing that, or Windows Phone 8 is going to be bringing...
Windows Phone, you have to turn it on in settings, but it is in there.
You know, and the thing is, it wouldn't surprise me if Microsoft had another partner. They're like, oh, by the way, yeah, you know what? Nokia's our buddy. HTC is our new buddy. And this company.
Right. This will be ZTC or whatever that is.
ZTE's got the holographic keyboard. Yeah, that's what we'll do. Because they're our new signature partner buddy pal.
Because it's really hard to type in Chinese. And if you had that, it would be easy to enter those characters.
Oh, they just have so many partners. I believe the word used by Paul last week was promiscuous, Microsoft, or a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And there's the video showing this multi-touch keyboard that is actually on the iPhone 5, according to this news report.
Is so awesome.
You know, there have been products like this before, actually. There's an IR one, and it just doesn't work very well because when you're typing on a desk, there's no give. It's even worse than glass. So trust me, I wanted it to work. I so wanted it to work. I always wanted a keyboard like that. And we should thank a sponsor. But you know what? I think we should throw it to Leo Laporte, who is standing by for this very important message.
Thanks, guys. I'll be right back to Windows Weekly in just a moment. But I wanted to mention our friends at Citrix. You know, they do such great stuff. In fact, if you know, as Windows users, you know in enterprise when it comes to remote access, Citrix is the name. In fact, maybe you don't know this, Microsoft licensed Citrix technology for their remote desktop protocol, RDP. And Citrix makes also a very easy to use, very powerful kind of consumer focused tool that you're just going to love. Makes it so easy to do remote access. It's called Go to My PC. And it lets you directly connect to your office Mac or PC from any computer anywhere, even from your iPad and your iPhone. It's 128-bit SSL, so it's secure. In fact, it's a really great way to surf safely from, you know, kind of a sketch open access spot or your hotel. Just surf to your office. It's just like a VPN. Easy to set up, too, because they use NAT traversal, so you don't have to worry about opening a port on the firewall. That's not only dangerous, it gets the IT department involved. You can install Go to My PC right now on your office computer, and you'll be ready to go. Why be chained to your office? When the workday's done, go home. Maybe even go home a little bit early to avoid the traffic. Don't miss out on that personal time with family and friends. You get stuff done, even from home. I'm here to tell you, the best way to balance your work and personal life, Go to My PC. And with Go to My PC from Citrix, there's nothing you can't do. You can literally pull out your iPhone and connect to your office computer, PC or Mac, run any program, access any network resource, save and edit and send any file from wherever you are, whenever you need to. Can you try this for me? Will you try it for me? Visit gotomypc.com. And we have a 30-day free trial just for you. Visit gotomypc.com. Click the Try It Free button. The promo code is Windows. And then get that free app on your iPad or your iPhone. It's free. 30 days free, and the app's free forever. Go to mypc.com. Try it free button. Use my promo code Windows. Windows. Now back to Paul and Mary Dothola and Windows Weekly.
Man, it wouldn't be a week without with this show if without him screwing up Mary Jo's name.
So now we kept that in for consistency. We asked Leo to do that. So thank you, nice. Leo, to messing up Mary Jo's name. That's very helpful for the program.
Last week I was Mary Jane. That worked.
Mary Jane. Yeah, I guess there's all kinds of iterations. You know what? Maybe you should have a version number on you. You know, Mary Jo 2 or 3 or something. But that's all out of fashion at Microsoft, apparently. There's no more version numbers. Why bother having Office 13 when you can have Office 2013? Actually, I don't know what they're calling it. So what's the deal with Microsoft?
And why the inconsistencies, right? You know, like if you follow Apple products, you know that the latest iPad is not the iPad 3. It's the all-new iPad. But the latest iPhone is the iPhone 5. Like, why are those different? You know, but on the Microsoft side, what we have, I haven't actually made a chart of this, but it seems like what they're doing is as they replace on-premises software with online services, like Office 365 and Windows Intune, they're dropping the version numbers. And then I noticed with Office 2013, because that will be available as a subscription online, we have been instructed that we must refer to this as the all-new Office, just as Exchange is the all-new Exchange. Or rather, I'm sorry, just the new Office and the new Exchange. You know, they're trying to de-emphasize this. So I think this is kind of a curious and interesting trend. And I think that the day at which Microsoft no longer has these version numbers or year numbers, however they do it, will be the day that they signal to IT that you are no longer needed. Because there will be no more on-premises software for you to manage. We're going to do it all for you in the cloud, you know. It sort of seems like we're heading in that direction.
Yeah, but the interim is a little bit rocky, right? Like for right. Office, some of the products, like some of the client versions are called Office 365. Some are called Office 2013. Some are called the new Office, mm-hmm. right? So it's really hard for us when we're writing a story or like trying to explain something we're talking about. You know, which Office are you talking about? Yep. Are you talking about what's codenamed Office 15, which is Office 2013, but it's also the new Office? Yeah. So that's why yep. it's getting a little confusing.
Yeah. And I,
but
you
yeah,
know,
I think it's good they're doing away with version numbers in the cloud because they don't really make sense, right? Because you're always revving things in the cloud. So, you know, like Office 365, that gets revved every single month with at least some new features. So you couldn't have version numbers on that.
And they're promising to do that for Office 2013 as well. If you get the cloud subscription, that they're going to keep this thing updated continuously. Same theory.
I mean, definitely. I think you guys are hitting this on the head. It's flat out Microsoft saying, "Look, services are the future for us. We can't just keep selling the software. You're not going to go into a store and buy an actual DVD or a USB key or anything strange like that. You're going to go and you're going to pay a subscription fee to Microsoft, and you're going to pay for Office, and that's going to be as simple as it is, because there's no reason. Yeah. Like, Google Docs doesn't have a version number, does it? I mean, none of these things do. At this point, even the browser updates itself, at least for Google, so you have, you don't even care about the version number. You just want the latest one. Although, maybe because I've been using computers for a while, I don't like automatically being updated to things all the time, because sometimes those improvements break things.
People like you will be removed from the equation.
Oh, good.
So,
good.
Thank you for admitting that publicly.
Actually, people like you, Iaz, are better supported by Microsoft, because at least on the business side, with Office 365, they give you a heads up when they're going to update it. And they say, hey, do you want this? Do you want to block it? You have till this time to get it. So that's something they do right. Although they're not going to do that, I don't believe, for consumers and small business, true small businesses.
Yeah, people like me. They
people like you.
You people. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. People think you own software. I can't stand you people.
Yes, I'm like, I don't want a ribbon today. Why is there a ribbon? What is this? But I used to know how to use this. Why did you? Oh, you made it better. Thank you so much for.
Well, but this reaches some logical conclusion, right? I mean, Windows RT, when that's updated for whatever Windows 9, whatever we call that, does it become RT2, or do we just keep calling it RT? I bet we just call it RT. And you have to think that that's kind of the goal for just Windows, that it becomes Windows, or Windows RT in that case, that they really want to get rid of this notion that you have some version of it. I've always hated the year number things, by the way, because that year numbers are like cars, I drive a 2000 VW, which tells you that I have a really old car, it's not new anymore. It's not even close to new. Whereas if I was running something like Word 13, which doesn't actually exist, but most people would have no idea if that was new, old, or whatever. It's just a version number, And the year number thing never made sense to me. For that reason,
I think though, for people who are freaking out listening to us, the enterprise users, don't worry. I think there's still going to be Office 2016 that's going to be installable on your client. Like, they have too many enterprise users who are not like ready to do the cloud only thing, and especially some small business users who aren't. So I think, we'll still see another version of Office with a date probably on it in 3 more years. So don't panic, those of you who aren't ready to make the jump.
Wow, that's like going to the doctor and saying, don't worry, you have at least 2 years to live.
Maybe they'll be Office 2019 too. I don't think they're going to pull the plug on what their really big, high-paying customers want anytime soon, in other words.
I'm just thinking about that. Alex showed a graphic of Windows 98 and store shelves. I mean, there was Windows 95 and 98 and 2000. Eventually, they just dumped that entirely. It's like we got nonsensical things like XP and Vista.
Well, they did, but they didn't drop it on Server. They didn't drop it on Office. They didn't drop it on Visual Studio. They didn't drop it on a bunch of the server products. They really do use your names all over the place. And then I think it was Vista, if I remember the term, which I always love so much, is they wanted to give Windows an aspirational name, which was the rationale behind Windows Vista.
What did it aspire to do?
Be better than it was.
Oh, okay. It aspired to be Longhorn, which I'm still
waiting
waiting on Longhorn. I still have like my old PC worlds about Longhorn. One day. WinFS. One day.
You know what's going to be super interesting, though? Because we keep hearing about this thing codenamed Blue that's coming out next year, that's a version of Windows, right? Like, what are they going to call that? Like, what is that thing?
Yeah.
No, that's rumored
to
be
awesome.
That's rumored to be an update to Windows, but that breaks its all the whole city nomenclature. Their code name. What's up with that? Are they is this Synofsky saying the heck with it, or is this?
I think that ties into everything we just said, though. I think that is the point, that those city name things that represented like a new product, right? That's the point. You don't give a city name code name to version 1.1. You just give it 1.1.
Unless
whatever.
There's a city named Blue, I'm not aware of this. There could be. It must be
maybe updates get colors. So they'll be
I like it.
Like the updates will be red. Then we'll get into like the Nokia names for colors. Canary yellow.
Yeah.
Right.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
Maybe we're making this up, people. Don't take this as
unlike the OS X stuff, you'll never run out of names either. You won't have to come you don't have to start making stuff up near the end. Like, but the next one's like a, it's like a feral cat or a house cat. Or, you know, how many cats do we have left? Are there other cats?
Yeah, I was thinking about the white album, actually. So there'll be Windows White, Windows Off-White, Windows Eggshell, Windows Ecru.
And then finally Cyan. Rubber Soul.
Windows Rubber Soul. Why not just name them like albums? Heck with it. Just call them anything, you know? Just call it Microsoft, Microsoft. Like the Beatles, when they did the Beatles.
I don't know if you guys remember this. Remember, even city names weren't safe for them, though, because they had something codenamed Fiji. And remember the government of Fiji went after them at one point and said, hey, we own the name Fiji.
Fiji was home, what do you call it? Media it center, was, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's really, yeah, okay, well, I guess maybe that's why they didn't bother with names or version numbers anymore. Somebody's going to claim ownership. The heck with it. And that's again probably why Intel stuck to Atom.
How can you complain about a code name?
The people did. That's how. It's just that easy, Paul. People can complain.
Remember, Carl Sagan complained about an Apple code name back in the 1980s, I think, or in maybe 90s.
I'm going to complain about something that happens in the future right now. I take offense to what Intel does in 3 years.
I take offense to Windows IS. How dare they?
They can have the name as long as I get royalties for it. I'm not going to sue them over it, but I might have some kind of prior stuff for them. So we got Barnes & Noble had some new Nooks this week. I was super excited about this because Barnes & Noble's, they introduced their new Nook video service. It's not a subscription service. You have to pay for HD and SD content. It's coming out at the end of October, and people are like, oh, that's great. But then the next day, Barnes & Noble showed off two new tablets, and they're both running Android 4.0 or 4.03 Ice Cream Sandwich, highly skinned, but I see here there seems to be issue that there's no Windows RT version because I thought Microsoft and Barnes & Noble were friends. Don't they have a company together?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. That's why this was kind of funny. Like, I didn't know if they would actually have a Windows 8 or Windows RT Nook already, but I guess I kind of had it in the back of my mind, like maybe that might happen. But no, no Wook, no Wook, no Wookie. That's it.
The Windows Nook would be the Wook.
Wook.
Yep.
And the little one would be the Wookie?
Yeah.
Actually, the little one should be called the Ewook.
So, in other words, they released yet another video service because the world was clamoring for that.
Yep.
And actually, I have to say, the in the sphere of Android tablets, actually, these things look pretty good, right? I mean, they're very comparable to the Amazon things. They're cheaper, even, which is bizarre. Higher resolution screens. They look great. So that's nice, but I mean, these two companies just announced some huge partnership in February. They're going to work together and form a new country,
the country.
Company.
And that's just
not a country. Not yet. We'll get there. That's Office 2016. But you know, they were going to do all this stuff and then it's like just more of the same, you know, plus even the video service, you know, it's not Microsoft's. Like you think, Barnes & Noble, we have to compete with Amazon and obviously with Google and Apple as well. So we need these other services. Rather than partner with our already existing partner on that, who has a store that's been around for years and years, we'll just make our own new one. You know, it seems like a curious thing to do.
Well, how hard would it have been for Microsoft's Windows RT to be put on a tablet like that? I mean, these are TI-owned app processors. I mean, they have similar specs to Android apps, tablets, that is. So how difficult would it be for...
I don't think it would be difficult. I guess the issue is simply the surrounding infrastructure. I mean, obviously, there are Nook customers who have, you know, the first version of the tablet and have run those apps. And if they did do an RT version, that's a break with the past. You know, you're not going to be running those apps. But, I mean, even given the Android base of these devices, it would have been interesting to have the Nook video service be the first version of an Android-based Xbox video service on there. That would have been really exciting. I mean, that would have sort of obviated the complaint about no Windows RT. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah. Wouldn't the Windows experience kind of like jar the users of Nook, though? I mean, the interface for Nook is totally different. I'm not kidding. I'm like, it doesn't have tiles. It has this carousel and then a bunch of
things. Oh, no, but it doesn't have to be the same. Really, you're just hitting the back-end service. In other words, there's no reason that the Xbox Marketplace stuff couldn't be exposed in a very Android way on the Nook, or in a Nook way, I guess we would say, whatever that means. It's just a back-end service, right? There's no reason it couldn't look like Nook. I mean, maybe that would have been the point of this whole partnership, you know, but yeah, not, apparently not.
Yeah. The other thing they've hinted at with this partnership is that there's going to be some kind of a tie-in with Office, and that there's going to be a publishing tool coming where it almost sounds like a publishing tool for people who want to self-publish Nook serial books or whatever. And also for people who want to put their different kinds of content on their Nooks in different file formats. And we know Microsoft and Barnes & Noble are working on this together because of different leaks we've seen. So I thought maybe they'd even kind of throw that bone out there and say, see, we are doing something with Microsoft here. It's, you know, even though this is still an Android tablet, there is something coming based on this new company partnership that we announced back in April. But no, there's been absolutely no mention at all of Microsoft on a back end, on the front end, in any kind of a tangential way, which makes people kind of wonder, because I know some of my readers were like holding off to see if the Nook tablets, these new ones, would be tied into the Windows ecosystem, and they wanted them if they were. So they're already saying, no, I don't want them now.
I also, I didn't write about this, but when I looked at the Barnes & Noble press releases about this stuff, I searched for the term Microsoft, in other words, and it's in there in the, well, it's not really fine print. It's like this italicized print at the end, but it basically says something to the effect of, you know, we have partnered with Microsoft to investigate the possibility of starting this new company, which we're now calling NewCo, but that this may in fact not actually happen. And so maybe that's just something they have to put in there for regulatory reasons, because obviously market conditions change and strategies change and all that kind of stuff. But it was the first time that I had seen that kind of notion that, well, you know, this isn't a given. I mean, Microsoft and us have signed this strategic alliance or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the Nook gets spun off into this new company. I keep wanting to say country for some reason. It's possible that that won't happen, but you know, that may mean nothing, but it is in there if you go look at it.
I mean, the fact is, if they're running Android at all, there might be a chance that Barnes & Noble is paying Microsoft a royalty anyway. Doesn't Microsoft have like a ton of patents when it comes to Android in general? I mean,
Barnes & Noble is paying Microsoft. Yeah.
They said they're paying them. Yeah.
So they're all set. Microsoft doesn't seem to care. It's like, well, they're getting paid either way. Android makes probably more money than Windows RT does right now, because it has to be, because it doesn't exist yet.
Sure.
But yeah, I was quite impressed with the hardware that Barnes & Noble came out with. I was surprised by the price, $269 for a 9-inch tablet. I mean, that's impressive. But the fact that they could have had some kind of Xbox Marketplace integration, that would have been very intriguing, because
that would have caused a lot of people to look, twice. I think so, too.
They'd look at the Nook, and they might go, I'm not going to buy a book on the Nook. I'm going to look at the Xbox stuff. I just don't know if it's going to have the same kind of performance, though, when it comes to like Xbox style video. Because the thing is, I think there was a leak, the Xbox video service and music service, something like £9 a month or something. I think it's a rebranded version of the Zune Pass. Is that so? I mean, maybe Microsoft is holding that off for themselves to show off. Oh, look, by the way, every other device will have this. But why they didn't bother with the Nook? Do you guys think it's just too early? Because the thing is, I mean, we keep talking about Windows 8, we keep talking about RT, and none of those products are out officially until next month. Would it have been crazy to introduce that so early?
Yeah, by the way, actually, you've reminded me with regards to the Windows Phone 8 SDK stuff. You know, the problem with the SDK is you can't sign into an account and see how things kind of get exposed once you do that. And that's obviously a big part of the Windows Phone experience. There are little mentions in there about the Xbox Music Pass and about something called, it's called Xbox Music Cloud Collection, if I'm not mistaken. But of course, there are also Xbox video services that we don't really know much about that will probably be exposed through the phone, which you can't really see in there now because there's just no way to connect to anything. You know, the service doesn't exist in the back end. The phone itself and the SDK can't connect anyway. So, you know, I suppose it's possible, I guess, in interest of fairness, I should mention that, you know, seeing that stuff light up in Windows Phone 8 at the launch is not earth-shattering, but will be new information, right? I mean, it will be new to people and potentially very interesting in the same way that it would have been interesting if the Nook had it this week.
Yeah. I think we're getting to a point where, because Microsoft's trying to trickle the news out and they're staging things to happen at different times, it's frustrating people who know what's coming, right? Because we know, you know, Windows 8 coming October 26th. Then the phone's not coming until 3 days later. But then the next Xbox Live dashboard update, not till November, right? So they're trying to like give us the pieces at different times, but people know about all of the pieces already and they want to see all of these things converge, but they're not quite synced up on the Microsoft side. So yep. I think that's also leading to frustration too.
I was thinking if Microsoft started unveiling all this stuff at once, I think like they'd have a great week of news, and then people would go, wait, what happened with what is this? Well, I think it causes, when Microsoft does anything clearly, it causes confusion. I mean, just saying when they have one product, it causes confusion. They introduced like 15?
It would be too much. Even there was a period of the summer where they were releasing information every couple of days for a while there. And there is a problem that occurs when there's so much information that you actually forget some of the stuff, you know? And so someone will... you know, people do this with me via email all the time. They'll say, "Oh, did you see this? Did you know Microsoft was doing this?" You know, and yeah, we wrote about that 2 months ago. Or people will ask, "Windows Phone, there's all this stuff. You know, did you know that Windows Phone was going to have a recommendation service built in?" Yeah, actually, they talked about that in June. You know, or whatever. You know, there's all this stuff where because there's so much of it, you almost collectively forget some of it. You know, so it appears as new information. It's kind of like a collective form of Alzheimer's or something.
Reminds me when Samsung introduced the Galaxy S3 in I think it was like an hour and a half press conference, and they introduced this little MP3 player companion. They showed off all this new technology, and there was so much stuff that you just couldn't comprehend it all because people are like, wait, there's a phone, and there's an MP3 player, and there's another service, and there's this thing, and how do they all work together? I think maybe Microsoft trickling out the information might help in general, but with things that aren't being kept, you know, secret like this, they should just tell you about them, especially when things get leaked, like the SDK. But I'm very curious about where they're going to go with that.
Yep, me too.
So we got Google dumping backward compatibility with older Microsoft document formats. You know, I've tried to import things from Microsoft Office into other services and software to not great results in general. So I wasn't even aware that they were compatible, I guess, any which way. So
define compatible, I guess.
Yeah, like you have the text. It's not in any kind of formatted way, but you have all the letters.
Google should make one of those mechanical clown laughing sounds every time you try to import a Word document into Google Docs. You know, it could just be like, ha, 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 ha. Because it just is terrible.
So, but
this is, we're not even talking about importing here. This is,
sorry.
Users are no longer going to be able to export to the certain Microsoft formats. So, if you're a Google Apps for Business, Google Apps for Government or Education user, after October 1, no more exporting to .doc, .xls, or .ppt. So, the Word, Excel, and PowerPoint formats that still a ton of people use. I'm really surprised Google's doing this. It's like they made a big deal out of being very compatible with Office, and they tried to sell that as a feature of Google Docs for a while, and now they're taking this ability to export to those formats away.
You know,
and there's not really any reason.
I will have truly lived when I witnessed the day that someone like, say, the European Union, because they would be the ones that would do this, will force Microsoft to natively support Google Docs formats in Office because they have some kind of huge monopoly or something. You're like, you know, this is going to come. And that, you know, for Google to, this is going to backfire on Google. This is crazy.
Some people in the chat room are saying, those are old doc formats. There's, you know, it's
yeah, they are. Yeah. They're also
still
probably
used
on 80% of all of the documents in the world. Yeah. I mean, they're old, but they're very, very common.
It's funny through
Office 2003. So a lot of people still use that actually.
Yeah, when I would save as in my Microsoft Office, I think it was like 2009, I would save it as .doc just so it didn't break, because .docx didn't always work everywhere. So it's kind of, even though people are saying it's old, it's not that old.
Oh no, it's not. It's very pragmatic. I mean, for years I had to use .doc instead of .docx because people at the magazine that edited my articles didn't have that, or people at the publishing company that were doing the books didn't have that. In fact, I hesitate to look, but I wouldn't be surprised if the latest version, like Windows 8 Secrets, might have been written, like, I'm going to look in a .doc. Their template might even be a .doc. I never even looked.
Is it a book template?
Well, they have like a chapter template.
Okay, so I can write this book if I just use the template, huh?
Yeah, anyone can. It's really easy. I don't know why more people don't do it. No, actually, it is .dot. Sorry.
It's a fascinating read, this Windows 8 Secrets. You know, I didn't think things were possible, but this thing says...
It's basically a self-help book.
Yes. It's not just about the operating system. It's about you.
You can do it.
You are your operating system. Don't forget your own personal operating system. Paul, you're going to be writing a book about that. You know, you
I'm actually going to go, as Halloween this year, I'm going to dress up as a tile.
Oh, good.
I'm kind of living the dream.
Is it going to be a... Is it going to be like actively updating, or are you just going to have messages on it?
Yeah,
or?
It's going to be dynamic.
Amount of trick or treater scene.
You should come to the blogger bash wearing the tile.
I will.
Oh, actually, I'll come as like a zombie dot doc, right? Because it's dead.
Yes.
Right? That'll work.
That'd be good.
Or like a deformed export, some kind of horrible mutant that came out of Google Docs.
Just, or as we would call it, a Google Doc.
So you'll be a tile, I'll be a doc. And Mary Jo, what are we going to be?
Maybe I'll be Paul Ottolini because he's such a popular guy right now.
Jeez. Paul Ottolini also walks around like that clown machine I was imitating earlier. That's exactly what it sounds like. Exactly.
Just go around and start smacking people that just look like, you know, oh, you kind of look like Steve Ballmer. Right there. That's Paul. That's my Paul Ottolini impression.
Windows 8 is going to be great when it's done.
It's great. It sucks. It's great. Actually, maybe it's more like a Two-Face kind of thing.
That would be that. There you go.
There's your
Paul Ottolini as Two-Face. I like that.
As he shows up, you know, on stage for an Apple event, and then it's like, oh, Microsoft's no good. Yeah,
it's like public Paul, private Paul.
That's right. We bash all kinds of Pauls on the show, including.
I go actually when we turn off from this, I turn around and use an iMac all day long. So that's my hidden life is I'm actually a Mac user. See, that's how this works.
This,
you have like your public life and your private life.
I, you know what? People are going to take you seriously, Paul. You're so dry.
I know. I said
they're going to freak out. We're going to get
even
billions.
As I said that, I felt a pang of fear. But yes.
What do you use the iMac for? Is it like do you use it like as a? As
I
a,
would use it as a as something to wipe my shoes on when I came to the door. What are you talking about?
I was thinking you were going to like use it as some kind of it just holds your camera, you know, for Skype calls and things. That's all it does because it's just a shiny and it's a really good mirror.
I have a real computer.
A real computer. What's that like? Does it have?
It's nice. It boots up and works every day. It didn't cost me $3,000. So it's it's kind of a win-win.
It's a win-win, like that. I happen to have a Mac right there, just in case.
Right, I know it's teetering right on the edge, which I kind of like.
Oh, that. Hang on, I'm getting notes here from the TD over there. Alex wants me to talk about the pet. What's going on, Alex? We have the pet. This is what we should. This is the real computer this is what Paul has.
Yeah.
Just at home? That's fantastic. There's the
slightly
pet.
Slightly bigger monitor, but yeah, it's roughly bigger. That.
It's about like a 10-inch.
It looks like a Star Trek special effect, doesn't it? With that kind of the tapered screen with the, the weird angle on it.
Yes, it'll be, I'm telling you, that's going to make a design comeback.
No, it's not.
I'm going to put my Windows RT tablet inside of the pet. That's what I'm going to do. Just going
to
rip out.
That's a fishbowl waiting to happen. I'm surprised no one's done that.
I think people have done that with PCs. But anyway, that's exciting. What are people doing with their cars? You know, I think Leo's got a message from Ford explaining the latest and greatest things going on with that company.
Sorry to interrupt again one more time, kids. I want to talk to you a little bit about before we get going back to Windows Weekly about my friends at Ford and their new social site. Have you seen this? Social.ford.com. This is an interesting departure for Ford a little bit to really, and I think it's great to really get, they've always really, let's face it, Ford has devoted owners. And like me, I love my 2010 Mustang. I felt like I joined the club, the pony club. And people who own Fords feel that way. And I think it's smart of Ford to make a place for Ford owners to gather. They've been gathering on the web since it was possible. But this is a site for Ford owners, for people who are interested in Ford. Ford has put a lot of articles up there about all kinds of stuff, including technologies. I wrote a little short little article for it. I did an interview with a guy named Jim Buchkowski, who's a lead technologist at Ford. I really wanted to understand what the strategy was with Ford Sync, with the API. And as always, I asked him a little bit about autonomous vehicles, things like, these new safety features they're building in and going to build in, like lane departure warnings. They have a lane centering feature using onboard cameras that notices when you've drifted out of the lane and centers you back in. Some interesting approaches they're looking at, things like work management features so that when the road gets slick or traffic gets bad, the car helps you focus more on what you're doing You got to read the article. It's very interesting stuff. You'll find it in the technology section at social.ford.com. But there's other stuff there, too, including, in fact, I got to get some pictures up, pictures of Ford owners and their vehicles, videos, too. Ideas, there's a suggestion box where you can leave your ideas for Ford. They read them. They pay a lot of attention to them. And you can go and vote on other people's ideas. You can let Ford know, yeah, this is a good idea, or no, don't do that. That's a bad idea. Things like their Wi-Fi music sharing between Fords. I don't know how I feel about that. As you're driving down the road, a biodiesel hybrid. This is an idea from a 15-year-old. There's no age limit. Go to this site. Read more about this. Social.ford.com. Check out my article. And then pick up your Tech Geek badge. They've got badges. And for people like me who are into tech and cars, this is a great badge. I might get the Mustang badge, too. You can get more than one. Social.ford.com. We thank Ford so much for their support of Windows Weekly and for making great vehicles. Those new Fusions are out for 2013, including the plug-in hybrid I've been talking about. You got to find out more. Go further in a Ford at your Ford dealer and, of course, social.ford.com. Now back to Paul and Mary Jo.
Oh, it's just you guys. I can just go now. That's good. I'm really glad. Well, thanks, Leo, for putting that together for us. That's
a little sensitive there.
Yeah, it's like, okay. Yeah, he might be butchering Mary Jane's
it's
name.
It's Mary
here.
Jo and Paul and the other guy.
The other guy. Who's sitting in the chair today? I don't know. Some guy. That's okay. But now it's time to see what
Mary Jo has some news.
What this just breaking, and we have to talk about it because it's so bizarre.
Okay.
Microsoft has just made a strategic investment in Clout.
What?
I'm not kidding. Yeah.
Strategic
this
investment.
This just happened?
Not just
this
an investment.
Just happened.
But okay. A strategic investment.
So, yeah, I'm just kind of beyond words here because I'm not a believer in Clout. I never, my Clout score is going to hell now, I know, but.
right.
Now, people in the chat room are asking, what is Clout? Now, Clout is this service that takes a look at your reach, your true reach over other social networks. So on Twitter, you might have 10,000 followers, but maybe nobody's reading what you're doing. And they give you a clout score based on that. And you could be, it's I think from 0 to 100 scale. They also work with, I believe, Google Plus and Facebook. And they take a look at what exactly your true reach is. So for Microsoft to be investing in Clout, they seem to be thinking that there's something to this company that that helps you find out how to influence the world. I mean, it doesn't really make a heck of a lot of sense from the just hearing about it right now. But doesn't Microsoft, they have a history investing in social networking. I mean, they bought a piece of Facebook really early on, didn't they?
And Yammer. They bought Yammer. But I mean, I don't know. Clout, to me, I'm not a believer in it, and I've never cared about it. Like when people give me clout on Twitter, I'm like, oh, thanks. Right out of beer.
Wow.
Sorry. Oh, I know. I'm going to get hate mail from Clout. I know I am. But no, and you know, how Bing integrates Quora and what else are they integrating? Like, you know, when you have your side pane now in Bing, you can see what friends are recommending and you can see results from Twitter and Quora. Now, also from Clout, I guess. Ugh. Yeah, okay.
Hmm.
Anyway, moving on. I just thought it was so weird. I thought it was April Fool's Day for a second.
People writing, is it a tax write-off? It's like, I don't know why they're investing in Clout. I'm intrigued what they're going to do with it. I think Bing's actually a pretty smart idea of what they would do with it. It's like, oh, these people, these influencers of you think this, and that's the link you should be clicking. I'd probably, anything they do with social networking, I think Bing. So now, unless there's more breaking news, we're going to go to the listener Q&A. Lots of questions today. And the first question on Twitter I got today was, so will my Zune 30 or any Zune device really be able to work with Windows 8? Yeah, I'm that guy, says Tommy.
Hmm. Well, they'll work today with the Zune PC software, but I think what he's obviously asking is if they'll work with some future Metro-style app or whatever, and I would guess the answer is no. I mean, I think they're going to... Actually, there's a question. So we know that Microsoft is making a Windows 8 app for Windows Phone. There are questions about whether that will be Windows Phone 8 only or if it will be previous devices too. And I think it's inconceivable that Zune will be part of that, so I would guess no.
Mary, do you think they're killing off Zune support? Would Microsoft ever leave any of their users in the dust? They don't seem to do that other than Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, I wonder. What's also confusing is, like, there's the Zune client software, right? Then there's the Zune, the device, right? So the new Zune client software, we know, is this thing supposedly codenamed Daphne that we don't know a whole lot about, but that's coming. I never really thought through, like, so what is and isn't going to be able to be synced up through that? I don't know. I would be very sad.
I don't think they're going to go past the existing Zune PC software, because one of the big tenets with Windows Phone 8 is this ability where you don't need the PC like Apple does with their devices. And on today's Windows Phone devices, you do need the PC for certain things. If you want full resolution photos synced to your PC, that's really the only way to make that happen. If you want to rent or buy videos and put them on your phone, you have to do it through the PC and so forth. And so those limitations are going to go away. The Windows Phone app, you know, for Windows 8 is probably going to be just for, you know, for those people that want to do that kind of stuff and to do, you know, they'll have unique capabilities. Like, I think you'll be able to kind of remote desktop into it and move stuff around in the file system and so forth, you know, for people that want to do that. But I don't see that being a big thing. And I really don't see them supporting Zune devices.
Got a question about this HTC 8X or Lumia 920. Mm-hmm. Panorama here is torn. He currently uses and loves the Titan 2. Which is the most spectacular phone? 8X versus Lumia 920.
We can't say yet. We need to have both of them on hand and do side by side tests.
That's so reasonable. Come on, man. He's asking you a question right now. He's obviously wants to throw away, takes his money and just throw it at a phone, not even knowing how it is. So if you had to pick.
Yeah, so, right. So it doesn't matter what I would pick. It matters, or what Mary Jo would pick, I guess. It matters what is important to the individual, you know. If it works out that the Nokia Lumia 920 camera is, in fact, superior to everything in the world, but that the device is a little thicker and heavier and the memory is not expandable and so forth. I think a lot of, you know, for people who care about that the most, that's what's going to put that one over the top. I mean, I think the 8X is going to be thinner, lighter, kind of a more elegant feel to it. And we'll see it on the camera. The camera's supposed to be good, but I don't really, like, there's no way I could have an opinion on that. I have to use it. So
I think I'd ask. Go ahead.
We're getting asked this a ton, by the way. I think I get that question about 5 times a day at least. And, you know, the funny part is if we do say we like the HTC at all, we just get beaten down by Nokia fans right now, which is crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, I keep saying what's great right now is we actually might have choices, guys. So just be happy there's going to be choices. And yes, Nokia has done a great job at building the app ecosystem, no question. But I want to have a choice of device. So, just say HTC is crap. Let us have some choices.
HTC reset the equation for me, which I think is interesting. But I think Windows Phone users have a lot of ego is the wrong word, but a lot of their, you know, their mentality around Windows Phone is kind of wrapped up in Nokia because they see Nokia as the big, you know, company there for the hardware. But, you know, you should, I even before I knew about what HTC was doing, I fully intended to look very closely at the Samsung device because, for example, I had really good experiences with the previous Samsung Windows phones. And that device is apparently based on the Galaxy S3, which has been very positively reviewed and so forth. And so, you know, with HTC Lumia, okay, but what about the Samsung too? I mean, all these things need to be compared, so we'll see. And what's going to come out of this will be, I mean, I'll decide for myself, obviously, and Mary Jo will too. And some of it will be based on availability, what you can get on certain carriers and so forth. That helps whittle down the decision. And then some of it will just be based on those things. Some people prefer 64 gigs of storage because they want to have all their music collection on there or whatever. You know, everyone has different things that they would put ahead of other things. And so it's going to be very much on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I think he should really seriously ask himself the question, which color phone does he want?
Because, start from there.
At this point, a lot of the phones, I mean, they've got some really good specs together. I mean, and assuming that you could get it on the same carrier and you just, it's a toss-up, what color do you want?
Is it odd, though, that both Nokia and HTC are offering yellow phones?
I think it's odd that one company did it at all.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Two did. It's like, why was there a sale on this pigment?
On yellow dye was just half off or something.
Was there like a lost phone market? Like, oh, you know what? I can't find it. It should glow. It should
Canary yellow, guys. It's in. I'm wearing some right now.
Look, there you go. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess when your phone is on silent and you can't hear when you're calling it because you can't find it, you'll see it glowing because it's radioactive green yellow. That's the HTC 8X next to the Nokia 920. I
don't mind the color of those phones, but I find those tiles impossible to read. I mean, it almost blurs into the white part.
Got a question from Sam Smith asking, would both Mary Jo or Paul cover Microsoft News if back in the 80s and 90s, Apple gained the lead and Mac was the market leader? Really deep question there.
That's a good question. So for me, I actually ended up covering Microsoft as a beat company by accident. I actually used to cover Unix when I started in this business. And one day the Microsoft reporter quit at PC Week and they said, who can we get to cover Microsoft? How about her? So it was just by luck that I ended up covering Microsoft. It wasn't because they were a leader at the time. In fact, they were really little when I started covering them. So it was just by chance that I get to cover a company that's kind of gone through the roof. And now they're all trendy again. So yay.
Paul, would you have been, would this actually say Mac OS X secrets?
So yeah, there was a chance. I had many chances to go to the Apple side throughout my life. I mean, I was a Commodore user growing up in the 80s, actually. And we had a house fire that destroyed all of our property. And so I went shopping for a computer and, I actually couldn't buy an Amiga at the time and got an Apple IIgs, which actually might have solved my Apple problem for me pretty permanently. But no, I mean, I honestly, from sort of a, I don't know what the, how do I describe this simply, but Microsoft has always been the company supporting the general public. And this sort of an elitist thing to Apple. Now, obviously today, Apple is like this mass market thing, but there's still sort of an elitist, high-end, niche-y kind of vibe to this company that I don't really like. I feel like technology should be available to everyone, and that historically has always been Microsoft. It's not that I like Microsoft or all of their products or anything like that, but you know, when I got into writing about technology, they were the mass market, you know, and yeah, I mean, who knows? Things could have been different, obviously, but. It's kind of hard to speculate.
That's also on Earth 2, as we previously mentioned.
Yeah, on Earth 2, I am in fact John Gruber. Yeah.
You're the daring Thorat, or the daring supersite. Yeah. That's actually what it would be called, I would imagine.
Right, right.
Someone wants to know, what's the experience like moving a storage space to a new Windows 8 install?
So actually, one of the delightful things about storage spaces is that if you have two or more disks, external, internal, both, it doesn't matter. And you have a disk that has your operating system on it, which can be Windows 8, could be Windows Server, 2012, any version. And you blow away the operating system and you install Windows again, server or client, doesn't matter. You can attach it to those storage space, whatever you have, and it will retain everything exactly the way it was before. And I've experimented with this, moving external hard drives from machine to machine. So you have a Windows 8 machine, three external hard drives. All of them are 3 terabyte USB 3 disks. Unplug them from the first computer, plug them into the second. The storage spaces come right up. All the data, everything is there. It's very seamless. So that works really, really well. And I'm going to experiment with this literally with my live data when someday in the next couple of months, Microsoft will release the RTM version of Windows Server Essentials 2012, and I will wipe out the OS. I will install the RTM version, and then I will attempt to reconnect all my stuff, and I'll let you know how that goes.
So this could be a disaster, or it could be something smooth.
Well, but we'll based out. On all the experiences I've had so far, it's been great. So I don't anticipate that being a problem.
That sounds pretty good. We've got a person here asking, has Microsoft officially killed the Expression brand of products? I don't know if that's a joke or not. I'm not even aware of this.
No, that's real. And their Expression Blend is still alive. It's part of the Visual Studio 2012 family, I think, or integrated right into the product. The other Expressions, I don't know anymore. They really have de-emphasized the brand after making a huge deal out of it. But these are their design tools. And every time you bring them up, people say, why don't they just buy Adobe?
Yeah. Yeah, so they had, there was a web designer, there was, I think there was literally a Photoshop type competitor, And then, of course, these application designers, which continue as basically as part of Visual Studio, right? They kind of give them away with the Express editions and so forth. But I don't, I haven't really heard much on that stuff in a while.
Question from Scott. This is a Windows Media Center question, which I'm intrigued about the answer to this. If we upgrade to Windows 8 Pro Pack from Windows 7, will it keep Media Center settings and recordings, or do we have to reconfigure? This is.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry. So, I don't know.
Nor do I.
I was hoping. I have no idea yet either. I have a Media Center PC, and I don't know what's going to happen if I put Windows.
I just speaking cynically, I would say that Windows Media Center in Windows 8 has been designed to make everything as painful as possible on you. So, I would imagine that it will not retain those. But I honestly just don't know. I'm sorry, and I don't know that it's even possible to upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 8 Pro with this pack. I have a feeling what you do is you upgrade to Windows 8 Pro, and then you go and you download off the internet this pack that gives you Media Center, and whether it, retains that stuff off the disk, I just don't know. I'm sorry.
So we'll find out. I guess we'll all find out together. I'll try it out
certainly,
on my machine.
Yeah, certainly we'll test that when we can.
But I'll see all my Parks and Rec recordings being destroyed and right. Not know well, if the green button won't work
maybe
anymore.
Maybe not bad news, but...
Hey. Oh, no.
I want a show that's just like The Office, but it's called something else and has different actors in it. Is
that was the first season. It got better after the first season. It took a while to find its niche.
Okay.
It's like the Nook, but the niche. People want to know, when do you guys think Microsoft's finally going to give the details for pricing and availability for the Surface products? Because, they were introduced, but they're going to be, the pricing has been really kind of sketchy. Nobody knows what exactly it costs.
I'll give you what one of my sources said this week, and this is pure speculation, I believe. I don't think this person actually knows.
That's the best kind of speculation.
I know, but he might. I don't know. What he said was, if they really want to totally follow in Apple's footsteps, they should give pricing and open up the pre-orders around October 8th, like 2 weeks before. That's just a guess. We don't know.
Right.
So,
a question from Dylan asking, does Microsoft have any Siri competitor?
Oh, man. So Microsoft has had voice control for a long time, I guess. And Windows Phone has had the ability to launch apps with your voice for 2 years. So it doesn't do everything that Siri does. Obviously, there's some kind of semi-sentient conversation thing that people think they're having with this device on an iPhone. But voice control has been available on Windows Phone.
Well, they also have Xbox Connect. You scream
Xbox,
out Xbox, yeah. And you can do anything you want. So I believe they do have it. If they wanted to bring
they
that
just
in.
Don't, Apple, honestly, I think aside from the silliness of some of that stuff, the biggest success with Siri, as with all things Apple, is just their ability to market it as if it were A, new to them and never done elsewhere, and be revolutionary every single time, so Microsoft just doesn't do that kind of thing.
Microsoft,
maybe they'll copy that next after the secret of it.
Microsoft had a bunch of voice control products. I know I had it when I used to have those old really crappy, those little creative stick mics, because computers didn't have, webcams with microphones in them. They had these awful cheap things that came with your PC, and it was little beige microphones, and I'd be talking into them trying to get my computer to do things, and it worked if you did the right syntax. It was pretty early days, but
I'm surprised there was never a 90s action movie where someone used one of those things to kill somebody.
The actual microphone as a weapon, or the voice control?
Let's jam it through someone's chest or something, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that's what I had. I had this device on my desk.
And then he could say something like, Siri, die. And just jam it into the guy's chest.
Oh, I think you've invented the worst sketch ever. It'll be. I would love to see it. I'd like to see it on. Actually, whenever you finish it, put it on SkyDrive, and I will.
back to speech for a second, though. Sure. To bring it, make it even bigger. Microsoft bought Telme Networks. Do you guys remember that back in 2007?
Yep.
And they bought them for like $1 billion. And they are doing a lot of things kind of under the covers with their assets from there. That's what is enabling you to say Bing Xbox. It's the Telme technology. And they're also lets you use it in your car, right? And Windows Phone. All that's related back to Telme.
Yeah, they have Microsoft Sync. People forget about that too. It's in Ford's, and like it works.
I think the better question would be, when is Apple going to capitalize on voice control in the same way that Microsoft does?
Well, once they take off that beta tag, I'm sure everything will work, right? No.
That's an interesting question. Have they not taken off the beta tag?
No, it's still, even with the iOS 6, it's still Siri beta, as far as I know. Which means it doesn't work. You know, it decides to do whatever it wants but it does handle swearing very well. I will say that my Microsoft products don't handle swearing very well.
I get twitchy when I see people taking a photo with an iPad, and I have not yet witnessed anyone talking to the phone with Siri out in the public. But if I did, I think it could get scary.
Okay, I'll take a picture of Paul with my iPad. Let's see if he gets twitchy. Is he getting twitchy? There's the twitchy. There we go. Let me get the photo up of Paul being twitchy.
I've seen a lot of people in New York using their iPads to take pictures.
Yep. I know. It's so awful.
It's because they actually put a camera on this thing, a real one.
No, but the camera stinks. See, the thing is, in your pocket is almost, if you own one of those things and you're out in the world with it like some kind of a Goonberg, you have in your pocket, I know you have an iPhone 4S or 5 now.
Who?
You, iPad user. So that thing... thing has an excellent camera in it.
You people.
Come on, why would you use the big thing that doesn't take good pictures? That is begging you to have someone walk by and slap it down onto the ground or steal it. Use your camera. Use your phone like a normal person. What is wrong with you? Is that not too obvious? I'm sorry.
I can't wait for the next book for that user manual for myself. How to do more things with my operating
system. My next book is going to be called iPad Users, What the Hell is Wrong with You?
I'm going to take a picture with this book next. Of the thing, actually, I don't have another iDevice. That's the only iDevice I have. Because I want a real camera. I actually was looking into that Nokia, what is it called, PureView? The 41 megapixel, it'll be good. But
the point is, whatever real camera you have, if it's a phone, a PureView, or a point and click, every one of those will be better than the camera in that iPad. Every single one of those.
Spoken like a guy who hasn't tried the camera in iPad 2. iPad 2 had like a sub-megapixel camera. It was like...
No, I've used the camera in all three of them. It's terrible. Actually, the first one didn't have a camera.
The first one is great. It doesn't exist.
Okay.
No promises.
That was the perfect camera.
Yes, absolutely, because I don't know if...
Perfect tablet camera.
Like, see, this device, right? This is the X1. It doesn't have a camera on the back. Not sure why. I mean, just happens to be a lot.
Really? You're not sure why?
No, really? I'm just kidding. I mean,
not clear on that?
I should always be able to take pictures of whatever's in front of me. I want to hold it like this because it's so light. This is the X1. Did a review for this on Before You Buy. Big fan of it. Don't like the display so much, though, unfortunately. And Alex put on Windows 8 on this, so it's snappy.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh, I did not mean it that way, but thanks. Thanks, Paul, for doing that. Let's see. What's coming up now? We got picks, right? We got what upgrades to do what? That? What? I'm confused. What the heck does this say?
That's it doesn't look like English, but it sort of is.
Well, you're a writer. Let me know.
Let me diagram the sentence for you.
All right, let's do it.
I wrote a series of articles about upgrading from previous versions of Windows to Windows 7. Because the experience you get is actually quite different between one, two, three, four of the supported versions. So you can upgrade from Windows XP, Vista, 7, the Windows 8 release preview. And I also tested the Windows 8 Enterprise Eval, which actually does not work. What's interesting is, of course, Microsoft is trying to make this process plain English and simpler for people. So they provide these, that's the humorous one, like choose what to keep. Nothing. So you get nothing. So you can't actually upgrade from the Enterprise Eval version. But it's fun. What's interesting is there are different types of upgrades. There's the in-place upgrade, which I think is what most people think of as an upgrade, where it brings everything, all your applications and their settings, the operating system settings, most of them at least, your user data, all of your documents and so forth. That's the ideal situation. You only actually get that with with Windows 7. For the other operating system versions, it depends on which version you have, and you get sort of subsets of that. So sometimes you can bring forward your documents only. Sometimes you can bring forward your documents in your settings. These things used to be called migrations or partial migrations. Or you can do a clean install, which is that do nothing, where you basically, even though you're running the upgrade, you're just doing a clean install. It's not going to save anything. Somebody wrote me on Twitter about that last issue, actually. It's worth noting, and I probably should have added it to the other articles as well, but If you do upgrade and choose do nothing, Windows Setup, of course, creates this folder called Windows.old, which includes your old data files. So that even in that case, you actually do have a way to go back and get them. You would just have to manually copy them over yourself. So anyway, rather than step through every single one of these, I would just say sometime in the past week, I've written an article for each one of those versions of Windows, and you can go check those out on the website, which is probably the better thing to do to understand what it is that you can bring forward if you choose to go from an older Windows version to Windows 8.
Well, the next thing coming up, software pick of the week, which I think about 20 years ago, these words mean nothing together. Amazon Cloud Player, because it just sounds like gibberish. But today, that sounds quite reasonable. The Amazon Cloud Player, apparently, what makes it the software pick of the week?
Yeah, like why now? So nothing new has happened with Amazon Cloud Player really recently. It's just that over the past year plus, I have been experimenting with various cloud services for music. And it's worth noting that I think Microsoft is going to have a SkyDrive-based version, which may obviate this pretty soon for me at least. But I've used Google Music. I've used the Amazon one. And then I use the other streaming services like Zune Music Pass or Spotify, Pandora, all of which are not exactly the same, but they kind of provide similar services and so forth. The thing that I like about the Amazon one, though, is that it works almost everywhere. The one place it doesn't work right now that kind of kills me is Windows Phone. But if you have an iPhone, if you have an Android device, obviously the Kindle stuff, which is based on Android. If you have a PC, you can go through the web version of the Cloud Player, which is how I access it. Amazon's got a great MP3 store, which you probably know about, mp3.amazon.com, or Amazon MP3, rather. And when you buy music from that service, much as with the other competing services, like iTunes, actually, I should mention iCloud, of course, iTunes Match and so forth. I've also experimented with that. But I think that for right now, Amazon's is the one that is just the most compatible with the widest range of device types, which is kind of why I prefer it. And it's the one I've been tending toward recently. And for whatever reason, over the past couple of months, when I go to buy music, I do look around at the various places, and not every single time, but almost invariably, I'll buy it at Amazon, in which case they just put it right up in the cloud storage for you. And if I do end up buying something somewhere else, because occasionally iTunes will have certain songs that are only available when you buy them, you know, an album through iTunes or whatever, I actually will upload them to Amazon pretty immediately. And so just through sort of attrition, it's the one that has kept up to date. Like, I've not really updated the Apple stuff. I've kind of stopped updating the Google stuff. And Amazon's the one I've really kind of kept up with. And for whatever reason, it's just the one that I prefer. I think, maybe not for whatever reason, probably because it's on the devices that I'm actually using. So it's the one that right now that I really prefer for that kind of thing, for your own, you know, for storing your own music in the cloud.
We've got somewhat of a surprise for Enterprise Pick of the Week. It's not a piece of software I was expecting getting a new look. What is the Enterprise Pick of the Week, Mary Jo?
Yep. So people may remember when Office 2013 or new Office or whatever we're calling it today came out in public preview form. Microsoft said there were going to be two apps that were going to be Metro versions or Windows Store versions, whatever you want to call them. One of those was OneNote MX, which is out and people have been using. The other one is Link MX, Microsoft's unified communications application. And so that one did not come out with the customer preview. But Microsoft did reveal recently that there is going to be a final version of this product, which is not going to be called Link MX. It's, I think, just going to be called Link. But it's going to be a Windows 8 and a Windows RT version. So you can run it on Intel or the ARM-based tablets and PCs that are coming out as of late October. This is going to be the final version, and it's going to be out at the same time as Microsoft releases the Surface RT and launches Windows 8. And what it is a touch-optimized version of the Link client that is in addition to the desktop version of the Link 2013 client that already is out in the in preview form.
Now, coming up with the code name Pick of the Week, it's a city-based one, so clearly this is about a new Windows operating system. It's called Austin. I'm looking forward to this one.
It's actually not about a new version of Windows, surprisingly. But what is really amazing to me is what Austin is. Austin is the courier. Remember Microsoft Courier, the dual screen tablet that they killed?
It hurts to think about that. It was brilliant and beautiful. It's back.
Right. Everybody was like, oh, man. But they never brought it to market. They killed it. But they saved the code, it looks like, behind the operating system and the note-taking application that was in it. And they've turned this into what is codenamed Project Austin. It's a demo app that the Visual C++ team at Microsoft is building. And they won't say when or if it will be put into the Windows Store, but you can imagine it probably will be. It's kind of like a lightweight version of OneNote, but it has like a lot of the OneNote features. So it looks really cool. Like if you go on the Visual C++ team blog, you can see all these screen captures. You can see a video. And it has all the things that we thought the Courier was going to have, pretty much, except it's in an app form. So it's going to be interesting to see when that comes out and if it comes out. And people are already kind of chomping at the bit for it.
Yeah, hopefully this team is not killed like the project was. I don't know if this is even supposed to be seen again with Microsoft secrecy. Courier was so awesome, and it's just depressing to think about how it doesn't exist. This different idea. But yeah. that's a whole other world. Again, Earth 2, Courier. It's awesome.
Courier, we're all running couriers.
Couriers, which, it's the upstart because, you know,
Apple's
Mac's
sad copy called the iPad is not doing well at all.
Exactly.
Because it only has one screen.
And Intel is just the king of mobile. Totally different.
Right.
Back then.
Right.
But on this world, if you wanted to know a lot about Windows things, you know, it's a good thing we have Paul and Mary Jo. But Paul, where can people find you around the web or maybe even in print? Where is this possible?
You know, I don't have much of an online presence, if I did... Well, it would be at winsupersite.com. Also, windowsphonebook.com, where I'm working on a new book about Windows Phone 8. And I am on Twitter at Thurrott, which is T-H-U-R-R-O-T-T.
And author of Windows 8 Secrets, Do What You Never Thought Possible with Windows 8 and RT. And if you want to see Paul Twitch, take a picture of him with your iPad. It's true. Oh, I put it on Twitter. You can see it if you go to...
On this episode of When Writers Attack,
take a
picture,
takes
a picture of Paul with an iPad,
and he freaks out. It's true. Mary Jo, if he'll see you seem to like Microsoft. Maybe you wanted to do something like all about Microsoft. Is that some place people can find you online to talk about and read about your dealings with Microsoft?
It is. AllAboutMicrosoft.com is my blog over on ZDNet. And then I'm on Twitter at Mary Jo Foley, where I tweet a lot. Even during the show, I tweet a lot. I'm a multitasker.
Did you tweet about the construction that's been going on? If you were listening to this episode, you might have heard some rumbling. It was, partially my stomach and I believe some construction going on at Mary Jo's apartment outside.
Yeah, sorry.
You should apologize that you control the construction crew.
I tried yelling out the window to them, but it didn't do any good.
They had those big ear things on. They couldn't hear you. Anyway, I believe Leo will be back next week, and these fine folks do the show every week. It records live around 11 o'clock on Thursdays at live.twit.tv. So if you're like, I can listen to the show live, or I want to have questions put in and asked live, check it out, live.twit.tv. And I guess these folks, we'll see you next week. You people.
You people.
There's Twitchy.
Hey, and you even got my name right. That was awesome. Thanks.
You're quite welcome.
Actually, you're contractually obligated to screw that up. We might have to re-record that part.
You guys can hang out.
Oh, can we leave?
No, you guys are going to be guesting on iPad today here, so you guys are going
to
be in the...
Oh, I'd love to, but...
See, there you are, right in the center.
Right there. Paul Thurrott. Now, Sarah, if you take a picture of him with your iPad, he twitches.
It's wrong of me to say that I hate you both, because I don't, but...
Okay. Oh, he's got... Yeah, Paul... Tom is saying that...
He's going to be in the middle, like...
He's going to get his... No, he's going to use his Linux laptop to take a picture of you. Okay, so...